You're listening to Unceded Airwaves by the Indigenous Collective at CITR 101.9 FM. Unceded Airwaves is broadcasting from the traditional, ancestral, unceded, and current lands of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
I'm seeing red, I bleed red, I'm seeing red. I'm praying for my people out there who ain't seen it yet. His blood is cold, he's living lies forever told by his ancestors 500 years ago. Yeah, I said it, got my peoples getting restless, making money off our land and we ain't even on the guest list. Carry on traditions of a racist ass pilgrim, and I know you really love it when my people play the victim, cause it makes it seem like we falling under pressure. But we up to bat now, no more playing catcher, cause we see the bigger picture that we have to capture. See how quick we get together, man, we up to get ya. You can lock us in jail and throw away the key. Take away my...
Today's show intro was by Dreesus.
Unceded Airwaves broadcasts every week from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded lands of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. Vanguizi, my name is Autumn Schnell. I'm Treaty 11 Gwich'in and Anuvi Alouette on my mother's side, but I was born and raised on the Treaty 6 territory of the Cree, Métis, Nakota Sioux, and Soto peoples. I acknowledge that I'm an uninvited guest on the traditional, ancestral, and unceded lands of the Hunkaminam, or of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh people. Thank you to the Hunkaminam people. Thank you to the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people who host us today on their territory. We would like to thank our sponsors, Decolonizing Water and NORAD Electric.
Hello, my name is Nikita Day. I am from the Tahltan First Nation on my father's side and of settler German descent on my mother's. I grew up in Smithers, BC, which is on the Wet'suwet'en territory, and now I'm studying as an uninvited guest here at UBC on the territory of the Musqueam people.
My name is Josh Kiyoki. I'm from the Attawapiskat First Nation in Treaty 9 territory in Northern Ontario. I'm also settler Canadian, and I'm here studying as an uninvited guest at UBC as well, and I'm very happy to be here with both of you.
Yes. You're listening to Season 3, Episode 4 of Unceded Airwaves. Today we'll be talking to Billy Ray Belcourt about his recent book launch and readings in Vancouver, and Dallas Hunt, who accompanied him in his reading on Thursday. But before we get into it, let's set our intention for the day.
So we are the Indigenous Radio Collective, and every week we discuss Indigenous issues, current events, and entertainment. And we are a collective of Indigenous and non-Indigenous students who use our weekly airtime for our own self-representation.
We strive to center Indigenous voices on our show and to build narratives that empower Indigenous people. Unceded Airwaves is our opportunity to share and define the diversity of our cultures and highlight some influential Indigenous people.
If you can relate to the goals of the show and are wondering how to get involved, please reach out. You can always reach us on our social media. We have Facebook and Twitter. If you have a voice for decolonization, then we want to hear from you.
Yeah, and everyone is welcome, and there's no experience necessary. Our weekly meetings are every Monday at 4 p.m., which is at CITR in the lower level of the Nest. And if you want to get involved but don't want to be on air, there are plenty of other ways to participate in this collective.
You can follow Unceded Airwaves on Facebook and Twitter. If you're aware of a great Indigenous artist, send us a tweet using the hashtag UncededMusic, or send us a Facebook message at Unceded Airwaves, and we will do our best to get it on air. If we play a song that you send us, we will even give you a shout-out.
We are always looking to hear from our listeners about what you're up to, so let us know about any Indigenous artists that you're into right now and what events you're attending or promoting. As always, we'll post a link to the podcast of this episode after the show. We'll have our weekly Unceded events listing to share a little later in the show.
The wind has worn my edges. The cold pricked away brittle skin. Bones lying here in front of you. Lost before they can begin. There's red on the ice of the lake. There's bruises that never heal. There's past collapsing on present. She took things I didn't know you could steal. I cried like the ocean. I fell into your arms. My house is burning. I'm ignoring the alarms. Sometimes it's okay to feel that way. Stop counting the nickels and dimes. me cry one more great lake. Kiss my forehead a thousand times. Build me a never-ending fire. Play songs I've already heard. Tell me stories about caribou and skateboards. Fill my silence with pretty words. Oh.
LGBTQ2I Night is a positive space for folks to learn about bike maintenance in a relaxed environment led by queer mechanics and volunteers. It takes place on the fourth Wednesday of every month at the Bike Kitchen on UBC's campus. Bring your own bike and fix them with our tools, come with questions and ask away, or learn by watching other folks work on their bikes. Beginners are always welcome. This event is entirely free to attend and there will be free pizza. For more information, visit bikecoop.ca.
Disorders Shindig is back for the 34th year and is hosted at Hastings Mill Brewing Company, formerly known as Pat's Pub, every Tuesday night.
We've curated a spicy roster of local musicians, and there are 27 bands, 27 winners, but someone has to take home the Shindig Winding crown from last year's champ, Little Sprout.
Come watch bands jam out, have fun, and battle it out for some rad prizes provided by our sponsors.
Sarah Fox Postering,
Nimbus Recording, Cannery Brewery,
Pandora's Box,
Vader Master Studios, Rain City Recorders,
Mint Records,
Music Waste, Live from Thunderbird Radio Hell,
Six Cent Press,
Blue Light Studios, Hastings Mill Brewery,
Print Print.
So come out to Pat's Pub December 5th for the CITR and Discorder Holiday Night with the Afrolution, Damn It Samantha, and Duck.
The song you just heard was by Tara Williamson. On Friday, I sat down with Billy Ray Belcourt and talked to him about his recent book launch, his studies, and just a general catch-up with his life. Here is what he had to say.
So my name is Billy Ray Belcourt. I'm from the Drifpal Cree Nation in northwestern Alberta, Treaty 8 territory. I'm a PhD student in the Department of English and Film Studies at the University of Alberta. And my first book, This Wound is a World, just came out in September.
Wow. So let's start off by talking about your studies, I guess. What was the process of getting to where you are now?
Right. So I did my BA in comparative literature at the University of Alberta. And then I did a master's in women's studies at the University of Oxford on a Rhodes scholarship. And so now I'm back at the U of A to do a PhD. I study primarily art, film, and poetry by Indigenous peoples in Canada and sometimes in the U.S. I investigate questions of around ethics and aesthetics. And theoretically, I look at sort of the two valences of non-sovereignty, those that are good and bad for us. I study queerness, trans, two-spirit peoples. Probably sums it up.
Yeah. And then what about English? How did you decide on English as your PhD program?
Well, there's a few folks, faculty in the Department of English and Film Studies at the U of A who study Indigenous cultural production, who study writing art by people of color. And I had just such a good community of support and care at the U of A. There's quite a few Native people there, the Native Student Center, the Aboriginal Student Services Center is amazing, and they have a great staff there. And so I thought, you know what, I think I should go back.
Yeah, so English just felt right there. Yeah, yeah. And then can you tell me a little bit about the process in making your newly released book?
Yeah, so the poems that are in the book were written between the last year, I guess, of my BA and till the end of my master's degree. There's a couple poems in the book that are some of the first ever poems that I wrote are in the book. And I think you can sort of see the rawness of them. I'm still sort of trying to figure out how to work in the genre and the mode of the poetic. And I said in a CBC Books interview that the process of writing some of the earlier stuff was that of calling up memories, sort of sifting through the mess of the past, sort of using that as sort of raw material for theorizing and for writing. And some of the later poems I wrote over the last year were, I would say, maybe more conceptual. They were, had come out of a lot of months of reading poetry by Native and queer writers, sort of figuring out more precisely how to have a voice, how to communicate that in a poem, and also how to write thematically within sort of the constraints of a topic, of a place, of an event, of a feeling. Yeah.
Was it satisfying seeing it go from the preliminary stages to the final stages and then finally released?
Yeah. When I first saw the book cover, which has an image from a queer Indigenous artist and poet who's based in Portland, whose name is Demian Dineazi, when I first saw that cover, I was my breath was taken away. It was just, yeah, very moving. Sort of see something like that with my name on it. When I got my copies of my book in early September, I tried to film myself opening the book, but for whatever reason I couldn't get the box open. I kept stumbling with a knife and I was gonna post it online, but that didn't happen. And I was trying to like do a scream, but it just sounded very rehearsed. And that was a cool experience too. And like whenever I have my book in my hands, like my copy in my hands, it's not as exciting as when I see someone else holding a copy, or when I see it in a bookstore, or at a table where they're being sold.
Why is that, do you think?
I'm not sure. I think, and it's not like it's a different book. It's the same book. I was going to say, maybe it's because I'm more sort of used to the book, but I'm like, that's the same book as everybody else. I think just like knowing that it's in someone else's hands, that it's sort of outside of myself,
yeah.
that it is being bought and shared and read, is what makes it feel so moving.
That's really cool. What inspired the creation of your book?
So I guess I remember the first ever poem I wrote. I remember sitting on my couch being like, you know what? I think I can write poetry. Like I should try this out. And I had written something and it was pretty messy, and I sent it to a poet friend of mine, and I was like, I'm trying to write poetry. I just wrote this. Can you give me some advice?
Yeah.
And they did. And their advice sort of was very like objective. And I was like, is this a good or a bad thing? Like, they're not really telling me if the poem's good or not. But then I started writing more and sharing poems on my blog, naganisowind.wordpress.com, and it was getting a lot of interest, and people were into it, were teaching them in their classrooms or sharing them on social media. And that's when I figured out that I sort of was on to something.
That's what started.
Yeah.
What plans do you have after the release of your book, and do they include remaining on Treaty 6?
Right. So yeah, I'll be at the U of A for the most part in Edmonton till the end of my PhD.
When will that be, do you think?
2021, I'm okay. hoping. So there's still a bit of time to go. And I'm working on my second book now. Hopefully it'll be out in the next year or two. I'm hoping it'll be called Endian Coping Mechanisms, Notes from the Field.
Oh my God, I would buy so many copies of that.
Yeah, it's a sort of campy take on ethnography and autoethnography. And it'll include hopefully some of my textual art and my photography. And so I want it to be a sort of multimedia book in the vein of Claudia Rankine, Citizen. But also as sort of an attempt to show that words are sometimes not enough, that we also need the imagistic, that photography sort of too invites identifications, sort of curiosities, etc., that are useful.
Yeah. And did you include, or like, did you collaborate with anybody else on your book that was just released, This World is a Wound?
Not really, I guess, but I mean, a bunch of the poems were published in journals, and so I guess I did collaborate with the editors who published them to sort of fine-tune them. So I published with like Red Rising magazine out of Winnipeg, Prism, Malahat, The New Quarterly, Yellow Medicine Review. So yeah, all the editors there, I guess, had some sort of part to play.
Okay. And then why, or how did last night go? Do you want to kind of tell us how it went?
Yeah. So, Samantha Marie Nock, Dallas Hunt, and I, were sort of, I guess, the trio who read together at the Native Friendship Center on Hastings. And yeah, it was a full house. Had a lot of friends, colleagues there. A lot of people I'd been wanting to meet, etc. And it was just, it felt magical. Like, I didn't know how else to describe it. Christy Lee gave a wonderful opening. She sang, and she also read some of her own poetry. And then Sam did her thing. And by her thing, I mean that she was hilarious
and wonderful
and sort of moving, illuminating. And then Dallas Hunt read some of his really concise, pointed poetry. Such an intellect to it, I think. He complimented me on my wardrobe, wow. Which was cool.
And what were you wearing?
Always nice to be seen. I was wearing some overalls I got from Urban Outfitters.
Yep.
A black t-shirt from H&M that said, I would trade it all in for a life of Sundays or something like that, which is a sentiment that I just adore.
Yeah.
And boots from Browns and some and some cool socks.
Oh, wow, good outfit. Yeah. And then why do you think there are so few poets on Treaty 8? And do you see a resurgence of it?
Yeah, so the cool thing about last night is that the three of us all grew up on Treaty 8 territory, which is sort of northern Alberta, parts of northern BC. It also stretches up into Northwest Territories. And it was really cool that we all got together in Vancouver on the territories of the Musqueam and Squamish and other Coast Salish peoples. But it also made me think about how there are so few poets who come out of Treaty 8, both Indigenous and non-Indigenous. There's a small handful of us, I guess. And I'm trying to figure out why that is. And I think it, of course, has to do with the absence of creative communities up north, that there's such a scramble for resources and a scarcity of resources, that funding is sort of siphoned into places like primary and secondary education, to the few nonprofits that are up there. And so there aren't a whole lot of opportunities for artistic production and the teaching of it. So that, of course, is one of those reasons. And I think, too, that that art isn't necessarily an integral part of public life in the North.
Yeah. I feel that a lot.
Yeah. And that, of course, has to do with colonialism, the production of communities that, of course, don't have the funding, don't have the resources, are sort of battling all these other social issues, and art, creative production gets sidelined. And that makes sense, of course, that there's sort of these issues that have to be tackled first. But then, of course, art can help also in the project of cultural revitalization or decolonization or resurgence. And also, too, that because all these creative communities or publics exist in urban centers, a lot of us have to move away from our communities. Yeah.
My hometown is Inuvik, Northwest Territories. I wasn't born there, but that's where my family comes from. Right. And there are, like, no creative opportunities there. I get what you're saying. It's really hard.
Yeah, and so, yeah, I do think that we need a more concerted, pointed effort to try to expand these creative communities to the north.
Yeah, and then I also, I noticed that the final descriptor of your book is everybody is at least a little bit gay, and I'm wondering if you'd be willing to unpack that a little bit. I personally, like, agree with it 500%. I love it. But what about the people who disagree, or what do you have to say about it?
It's sort of, I think, an ongoing joke in at least the queer community that it doesn't make sense to think about sexual identity as something that is rigid, that doesn't shift, ebb and flow. And so I think that theoretically it's easy to say that categories like heterosexual or gay or lesbian or bisexual, pansexual, etc., all of these categories are always being agitated, they're always sort of being turned inside out, they're being subject to cultural, political, social shifts. And so it doesn't make sense to me, at least, to try to render these as objects that are fixed. And from, like, anecdotal evidence, from the kinds of people I see on an app like Grindr, which is primarily a gay hookup app, but there's so many, like, dudes who claim to be straight on there.
Why?
People are like, yeah, just a straight dude trying to have some fun. And I'm like, wow. But there, what that also points to is these sort of cognitive gymnastics that these so-called straight men have to perform in order to experience desire that they want to experience,
instead of just letting it be fluid.
And of course, that is a symptom of the logics of homophobia, heteronormativity, where to desire that which is outside of opposite so-called, this is such an old-fashioned term too, opposite sex desire, is something that is troubling, is stigmatized, marginalized still. And I just wonder, like, what kind of world would we have if everyone sort of owned up to the fact that they're all a little gay. Yeah. But also that we're not, that also has another valence, which is we're not just gay also. Like, those of us who claim to be gay are probably not just that.
There's more to us than that.
Yeah. And that's an exciting thought to me.
Yeah. And then what about, I noticed you mentioned two-spiritedness a fair bit. How did that come into play in your book? And how did you kind of unravel that and form your own definition of it?
Right. So I don't identify as two-spirit because there is a politics to it, and it is often binarized, and it gets sort of a conservative rendering that I don't agree with. Yeah. But a lot of folks do make claim to it and do find it to be world-making and life-giving and sort of the one category that is culturally specific enough for them to hold on both to their queerness or their transness and their indigenousness. And so two-spirit doesn't figure a whole lot in my book. I talk more about queerness, transness. And that's, of course, an effect of my academic training, too, where I'm someone who studies queer theory, critical trans studies. And I just think these analytics are more capacious, more spacious.
Okay, and then what did you study about queerness and transness?
Right. So there's a couple, I guess, lines of inquiry. I have an essay forthcoming. Well, hopefully, if it survives peer review, on the murders of a few trans indigenous sex workers in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And I look primarily at the way that journalists and police officers spoke about these trans indigenous peoples in the media. And they often did so in a way that was cis normative, that was transphobic, dead naming, sort of sloppily alternating between different gendered pronouns. Yeah, and it was just a mess. And I thought that this was actually a symptom of something, of a phenomenon that I think is readily experienced in trans communities, which is that of the refusal to let the dead be put to rest, and to allow trans folks who are murdered to live an afterlife that is congruent with the life they lived before death.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at cultural production by queer indigenous artists, filmmakers. I'm working on a creative nonfiction project, and I look, for example, at Adam Garnett Jones's film Fire Song, which is about gay Anishinaabe teenagers in Northern Ontario. I look at some of the art by Demi DiNiazzi. And so, yeah, I'm trying to think about what these artists render in relation to what I see as the radical potential of queer indigeneity.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Do you have anything else that you'd like to say? It's a hard question.
Yeah. I would like, of course, to give a shout out to all those organizers and educators who were responsible for bringing me out to Vancouver. Harsha Walia, David Gertner, Cecily Nicholson, Mercedes Ng, Rita Wong, Carly Baker, Ellie Gardner, I'm probably forgetting people. I feel like this is like an Oscar speech. I'm going to get, the music's going to play me out soon. UBC's Institute for Critical Indigenous Studies, the Longhouse, the Native Friendship Center, the Union of British Columbia Indian Chiefs, Simon Fraser University's Writer in Residence Program, the Department of English there.
So lots of people were involved.
Yeah, it was really moving actually to see all of it come together via social media and email and the mobilization of resources across institutions and across social justice circles was beautiful.
When did it start coming together?
I think just at the beginning of October.
That shortly?
Yeah, Harsha posted a tweet about the book and then was like, we should bring Billy to Vancouver. And people were like, yeah, let's do it. Like, we have the resources. Let's bring him.
And now Billy's here.
Yeah, now I'm here.
Do you have anything else you'd like to say, or is that it? I think other than buy Billy's book.
Yes, get my book, This Wound is the World. You can buy it on Amazon.ca, Alpine Book Publishers. Oh, no, Alpine Book Peddlers. I think you might want to Google search that. And maybe at a local bookstore.
Maybe a local bookstore. Perfect. Thank you so much for being here.
It was my pleasure to be here, and thanks for the invite.
Can a rigorous examination of current events help us think more clearly about the meaning of such foundations in the light of institutions and emotions, virtues and vices? Come out Wednesday, November 29th, in McLeod, Room 254, to join Professor Thomas Heilig in discussing a close examination of the foundations of democracy, religion, and the current crisis. This event is sponsored by the UBC Graduate and Faculty Christian Forum. Indigitization is a program that provides resources and training for First Nations and Aboriginal organizations throughout British Columbia. Come out November 24th from 1 to 4 p.m. in Room 2311 in the AMS Nest for a three-hour workshop that will engage participants in a conversation about the unique context of working with Indigenous cultural heritage materials, as well as introduce the tools and equipment necessary to digitize audio cassettes for long-term preservation.
Between two people, a link between two hearts, a path into the future. At the worst, not the start. You met me on my path, you held me on my way. I love you now and always. And I'll remind you every day. I think you forget that I love you. Just making sure you remember I do. I think you forget that I love you. Just making sure you remember I do. No matter where we wander, I'll get lost with you and you with me. Across the land, sky and water, when you're by my side, I'm free. The road will wind and turn, the light will fade and dim, but through the dark, he'll hold my hand and I will stand by. Remember I do.
Love is Love by Quantum Tangle. When Billy Ray Belcourt had his reading, he was joined by fellow Treaty 8 member and poet Dallas Hunt. I sat down with Dallas and talked about his studies, his poetry, and how he felt reading alongside Samantha Nock and Billy Ray Belcourt. Here's what he had to say.
Thompson Nathan Penpeck, Dallas Hunt Nisagasan, Nia Oma Nehio, Egla Wapasusipi Otinia. So, hi, I'm Dallas Hunt, I'm Cree. A member of Swan River First Nation, which is in Treaty 8 territory in northern Alberta. My pronouns are he and his.
Perfect. And then can we start off by talking a little bit about your studies? What was the process of getting to where you are now?
You mean long-term or just, like, recently?
Long-term.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah. So I kind of went to I went to school all over Alberta in Edmonton. I was in Canuso Elementary School for a little bit. That's up north where I'm from. And Lesser Slave Lake is about 30 to 40 kilometers away. I went there for high school, junior high school a little bit, kind of been all over. And then, yeah, I never thought I would actually go to university. When you grew up in northern Alberta, it's just kind of a focus on, like, trades and stuff like that, which I have nothing against any of that work. And a lot of my family members do that work, but I was kind of, didn't really know what I wanted to do, but I knew I liked to read and would write a little bit. So I thought, well, maybe I'll go to university for English. And so I did my undergraduate at the University of Alberta in English, and then I ended up in Ontario for a bit to do my master's at McMaster University, and then I've been here at UBC doing my PhD for far, far too long, but I hope to be done soon.
When are you planning to be done?
I hope to be done by January of next year. So I was just... I have a position at the University of Manitoba that starts this January. I begin as an instructor, but next January, provided I defend my dissertation, I'm hired on as an assistant professor. So I kind of have a deadline looming now, which I think I kind of needed a little bit. So I need to finish by January of next year,
yeah.
More or less. Yeah.
And then what about English? How did you decide on English as your PhD program? And why did you decide to take it at UBC?
Yeah, I don't know. So when I was kind of deciding what I wanted to do, I sort of had these kind of romantic, I guess, ideas of, you know, what an English or what a professor was like, you know, the kind of tweed jacket and the corn cob pipe. And I've had professors like that and, you know, whatever. And I thought, okay, well, that seems like interesting to me, or at least the idea of, I don't know, having kind of engaged intellectual conversations seemed like appealing to me. So I thought I would do it. I thought English would offer an avenue for that. It's only, you know, it was only after a couple years in English that I started to realize that a lot of the writing that I was reading wasn't really speaking to me. And especially the dudes with the corncob pipes and the tweed jackets weren't speaking to me. So I started to look elsewhere, and it's when I looked elsewhere that I started to just find the wealth of Indigenous literature that, like, definitely exists and yet was never really sort of championed. That was early on in the process. As I got later into the process, there were some wonderful professors at the U of A that sort of encouraged those kind of readings and, you know, seeking out those artists and writers. And so, yeah, when I was coming from Ontario to UBC, I kind of had a foray outside of English. I did my degree in critical theory and cultural studies / English. So that was more of a engagement with, like, theory and, you know, sort of more kind of headier topics and stuff. I felt I needed a grounding in some things before I could kind of expand, or I thought it might help my reading practices a bit. And then, yeah, I guess I was just always kind of into, you know, sort of text and the written text and what it kind of, the sort of worlds that offers or opens up. So I decided to make the switch back into English at UBC. And a lot of that was due to some of the recent hires they had over there. So Daniel Justice is this amazing writer and scholar who's currently at UBC, and I had the chance to work with him, so I jumped on it.
That's really cool. I forgot to ask also, what did you study at McMaster, and now, like, what do you, or not study, I guess, what did you focus on? Like, what was your thesis on at McMaster as well as at UBC?
Yeah, so at McMaster, my focus was on I did a what they call an MRP, which is a major research project, and it was focused on two tent cities that had kind of emerged in Edmonton approximately about a century apart from each other. One was in 1907, and then there was the overflow of homeless, predominantly Indigenous peoples from the Bissell Center in Edmonton, who also established a tent city in 2007. So it was kind of this, Alberta, as I'm sure most people know, kind of has a boom and bust economy. So when there's a bust, people really feel it, like, quite hard. And it's usually the people who are, you know, most marginalized. So, you know, sort of working class or lower class. And when I say lower class, I mean that in, like, in a very sort of talking about kind of the sort of economic structure kind of in place. So people who are kind of marginalized, especially Indigenous peoples in the inner city in Edmonton, there was a way in which I was just very curious as to how these two tent cities were treated by the literature that was produced at the time, usually kind of popular literature, like, you know, like newspaper articles say and things like that. And I kind of wanted to trace out these kind of differences and what this meant in a sort of larger macro political sense. That said, I really wish I had more time to work on that project. I enjoyed it, but the master's program at McMaster was only a year, so I had to produce it quite quickly.
Wow, that's quite short.
Yeah, so I wish I had produced a better project, but I was passionate about the material, and will I ever read it again? Probably not, but if I have a chance later down in the road to kind of, you know, work on some aspect of that, I might revisit it. And then the work I do now, I look at Treaty 8 territory, where I'm from, and I look at sort of kinship relations in a spatial, geographical kind of historical sense, how they, you know, modulate over time, the reasons they do, and kind of sort of larger context of Treaty 8 in a sort of broader, I guess, Canadian.
And then what plans do you have after you conclude your studies at UBC? And do they include any publications kind of similar to what Billy did?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the hope. right now, I'm just kind of, I've more or less been producing or pursuing, I guess, publications in sort of an academic context. But I also, I'm always kind of writing poetry. Some of it is poetry that I like, and some of it is just really bad poetry. But I have a folder of bad poetry on my desktop. But yeah, I mean, the hope is that I would continue to engage critically with the kind of work and communities and sort of activism that's being done in like Treaty 8 territory, as well as, you know, continue to write in a different register about these, or issues that are at least related in the genre or form of poetry.
That's really cool. And then how did the other night go with Samantha Nock and Billy Ray?
It was great. I mean, yeah, it's really hard to put into words the kind of atmosphere and the kind of just general feeling. I'm not sure if you were there. Were you there?
Unfortunately, I couldn't make it, but I really wanted to.
Yeah, so it was kind of like a, I don't know, it was super warm and welcoming, and it was just hilarious, and everybody was laughing, and I have family members there, which was also great, and yeah, I mean, anytime you're around Samantha or Billy, I feel like it's going to be a good time, because they're both hilarious.
Super fun.
Yeah, and I mean, it really was Samantha started off the night kind of... I don't know, just, I mean, not only is Samantha's poetry amazing, but it's also the sort of kind of dry wit and sort of self-deprecating, but also very confident way in which Sam kind of presents herself that is just, I think, set the tone for how the rest of the night was going to go.
It was serious, but it was also lighthearted at the same time.
Yeah, exactly. So it was great. And then Billy's, too, was phenomenal. And I went up there for 45 seconds or so, like, and then sat back down. So luckily I was able to just be more of like a witness more than anything, I feel like.
That's really cool. And then did you know Sam or Billy before this event? And has your relationship changed after? Kind of like, did you get to know them a little more?
Yeah, well, I mean, I've read of Sam before. And Sam... organizes a lot of poetry readings. So I mean, we also took a tree class. It was, so in my PhD, you have a year to do coursework. And I was taking these courses, like these English, higher level English classes, which a lot of them were very generative. And I liked the content. But I was kind of...
You just heard a partial interview with Dallas Hunt. The full interview will be posted online as a podcast. And here are some of our unseated events. The Trans Day of Remembrance is tonight at Carnegie Community Center from 7 to 10 p.m. The Transgender Day of Remembrance was created to memorialize those who were killed due to anti-transgender hate or prejudice. And this is very relevant to us and our two-spirited or queer family members. Indigenous peoples have a higher mortality rate than non-Indigenous Canadians, as do transgender Canadians. And many of us are two-spirited or queer, and we need to show support and solidarity to them in order to decolonize and bring two-spiritedness back and welcome into our modern society.
Only Drunks and Children Tell the Truth is written by celebrated Indigenous playwright Drew Hayden Taylor. Only Drunks and Children Tell the Truth is the gripping account of the 60s scoop in which Native children were taken from their families, their communities, and their culture to be adopted into white households. This comically rich and devastatingly truthful production, first produced by the Fire Hall in the 90s, is an unforgettable piece of Canadian theater, running from November 11th to December 1st at the Fire Hall Art Center.
Poetry is bad for you, 5. It is described as clean smoke, living information, warmth and warm context, trauma, LCD glare, felt flowers, rain coloring, the event preparation, alternative holiness. On December 9th at 8:30 at the Toast Collective, Poetry is Bad for You is a place where people can be brave and share their most vulnerable, intimate parts of themselves through their poetry. They want to honor that and keep their space as safe as they possibly can.
And Samantha Nock is reading at Poetry is Bad for You. And yeah, thanks for tuning in. Thank you to our guests, Billy Ray Belcourt and Dallas Hunt, for sharing their insight on Treaty 8 and their poetry. And thank you to our hosts, Nikita Day and Josh Kiyoki. My name is Autumn Schnell, and you're listening to Unseated Airwaves on CITR 101.9 FM.